listening to the Casterbrus podcast, where we talk about Doctor Who and a few other things. My name is Christian Corley, and joining me shortly will be James McLean. This week's show is dedicated to the idea of prequels. What are they for? What do they really do? Are they memorable, or are most prequels utterly forgettable? Do they stand shoulder to shoulder with the show or movie that they are inspired by or based on, or do they get forgotten? Matt Smith is in the new Morbius movie, but that's not the only thing he's in, is it? Because he's also in the new Game of Thrones spin-off series, which is due to start in a couple of months in the UK.
He seems to find productions which will give him a firm punch to the gut. I don't feel that the Game of Thrones prequel is going to be a big hit.
No, well,
Morbius is struggling. The Terminator that he was in fell apart.
Oh God, I wish I could. There's not many films. I've seen some really bad films, and I've never, very rarely, thought to myself, "I wish I could not have seen that. I wish I could literally unsee that." And it's not a phrase that passes my lips very often. In fact, that might even be the first time I've ever said it to anyone outside that isn't my wife, basically. But that movie is so bad. It just manages to ruin everything. Yeah, Genesis. I mean, Terminator Salvation wasn't a great movie, but Terminator Genesis is worse.
Is Salvation the most recent?
No, Salvation's the one. Yeah.
Bale.
Yeah, Bale, yeah.
I didn't like Bale. I found that movie very boring. And I think because they screwed the ending and changed it, it just lacked any sort of impact whatsoever. I didn't mind Genesis as a popcorn filler. I kind of enjoyed seeing Schwarzenegger back. Some of the tension was there. But yeah, it was a messy movie, and I was not surprised at all it didn't get a follow-up. But it was not a successful movie, is the point.
No. Well, I was talking to someone I work with a couple of days ago about Game of Thrones, and I don't know anyone who's gone back to watch it again from the beginning.
No.
Because of the foreknowledge of how it ends,
yeah,
and it does seem to me like maybe it's, I mean, I was kind of interested and thought maybe it's going to be quite good, but I don't think there's any love for it anymore, love for the universe of Game of Thrones anymore because of how it ended, really.
Yeah, I totally agree, and I think prequels were always a weird thing to do because no one ever asks for prequels. You know, it's just like eating food. Once you're eating your main meal, no one says, "I'm in the mood for pate on toast." So, people might go, "I want dessert," but you never go, "This is a good meal. Now I want my starter." People don't want prequels. And I find the Lord of the Rings one a bit mad as well, but I think that has got more opportunity to succeed because people have good memories of Lord of the Rings, even if they're a bit on the fence with The Hobbit. Game of Thrones, I mean, just purely anecdotally, I got an offer for a cheap deal on Now TV because I'd had it before, and I literally took it up last night. And of course, Game of Thrones is on there, and I was going to say to my family if they wanted to see it because they'd not seen the last season. And that's a hard thing, and they're kind of like, I don't ever want to. Mm. So if they're not even going to watch the last season, they're not going to watch the prequel. And yeah, it's just weird that he signed up for that. And it's just like, he seems to find some bad choices. Obviously, he's made some good choices as well. The Crown is, I always get mixed up which of the period ones he's in. Is it The Crown he's in?
Yeah, it's The Crown.
Yeah, which seems to be a fairly good choice. Right. Yeah, his big blockbuster stuff. Yeah, he's not making good strides. And as I'm sure where you were going with this segue before we derailed it both, Rise of Skywalker.
Yes. He wasn't in it, but he was cast. Mm. I accidentally found an article about this, which was published back in November. So I completely missed the boat on this, but Matt Smith was cast in The Rise of Skywalker and appears to have done screen testing and costume fittings. and maybe a combination of the two, but didn't shoot anything, apparently, because his role was cut from the movie. So one of the things that Matt Smith is believed to have been cast as in The Rise of Skywalker, which you'll remember, dear listener, perhaps, that this is the final part of the final Star Wars trilogy about the Skywalkers, supposedly. You know, who knows how that'll turn out. I mean, I'm pretty sure we're past the stage of any of the episodes being refilmed. I just stumbled upon our discussion about that a couple of days ago. Goodness me, as if that would happen. But Matt Smith, it's believed he was cast as the son/clone son of Emperor Palpatine, which would have changed things slightly in terms of how we get to the end of that story, which is kind of interesting.
I mean, they don't know. This is all speculation, isn't it? Yeah, they've never actually specifically said what he'd have been.
It does seem to be the most likely. Someone once
asked
him.
Because he thought it'd be something transformative, didn't he?
Exactly. The word's transformative.
Yeah, sorry, I think you're about to say that.
And someone asked him, I'm not entirely sure in what context this was, possibly in a Reddit chat, but someone put the concept of him playing the son of Palpatine, to which he coyly replied, "I couldn't possibly comment." So, it does edge more towards him being related to Rey than not. And apparently Jodie Comer was also cast and then wasn't cast. So maybe the pair of them played the parents of Rey. We know that Rey was Palpatine's granddaughter in some way. Mm. So it does seem as if that might be the most likely piece of casting for Matt Smith in Star Wars. But of course it didn't happen. And there's lots of other... I mean, Richard E. Grant, famous for playing many roles over the years, including the Doctor twice, and also the Great Intelligence in The Snowman, which is one of my favourite Stephen Moffat stories, I should add. He was in there. Plenty of other people were in there, but Matt Smith didn't make it to the camera, which is kind of a shame. But as you say, he's been doing The Crown, hasn't he? But I can't really think of him doing anything particularly significant that's had any kind of impact, really, since Doctor Who.
But then I think this is the point of the game, isn't it? It depends on what you're in and how lucky you are. Guardians of the Galaxy was a big hit. It was, you know, well written and well produced and had longevity through its franchise built in. It was a good call. I mean, in fairness, the Terminator mistake wasn't Matt Smith's fault, nor was Rise of Skywalker, but I imagine Morbius is not going to be his fault, nor Game of Thrones. It's not because he's badly cast.
No.
It's that what he goes into is just not got legs. And I think that's probably the factor. I mean, there's
the other side of it as well. It's because, you know, there is an actor who is out there who could be described as having stolen Matt Smith's act. Whenever I see Eddie Redmayne, I'm thinking to myself, Matt Smith could have done that. Actually, you're doing Matt Smith. So that must be a little bit galling.
Karen's work has been quite clever in the sense that, I mean, apart from the short spin-off sitcom that she had, which was apparently quite good, I never saw.
What was that?
That one, Selfie.
Oh, I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I think where Guardians has done her well is that she was able to take a role. I mean, because she's always been, as I think Moffat said at the time, and maybe I'm misquoting him, she was very much cast because she had the looks that he wanted. And obviously that she can act as well. But, you know, it was very much an aesthetic. There was an aesthetic about her. While in Guardians, all that aesthetic is very much removed to a coarser look.
Yeah.
And she does really well in it. And, yes, you know, she took the bold step. If I remember rightly, she did the sniff. She cut her hair off for it initially as well. You know, she went all out and it served her well. And I'm not saying that Matt Smith hasn't done that, but I'm just saying I think maybe Karen is an unusual success, but it's also a success made by making good decisions. And again, I'm not saying Matt's deliberately made bad decisions, but I'm just saying I think her success is one that should be applauded. You know, it's not just good luck. She worked for that and proved that, you know, against that horrible line of, oh, she's just a pretty face, which I've seen a few times.
Of course, House of the Dragons could complete House of the Dragon. I beg your pardon. Could completely go in the other direction and turn out to be really, really good in a way that early Game of Thrones was, or maybe in a completely different way. I love how the photos, publicity photos of Matt Smith's character, they just stood there on what appears to be my beach. And I know beaches all look very much the same, but it really, really does look like the beach that runs between Redcar and Saltburn through Mask on the North Yorkshire coast. It's just, it does look like that. It's a very beautiful beach. They're clearly not there. But anyway, I do like that photo. And obviously, Matt Smith would grow and bleach his hair in order. So it's not like I don't think he would say no to painting himself blue and shaving his head.
Oh, absolutely not. I don't doubt that at all. I mean, he removed his hair for one role, didn't he, famously? So there's the in-joke in Time of the Doctor.
Yes.
So, I was trying to celebrate what she's done rather than say he hasn't done that and that's why he's not done well. It's just a bit of luck and what you get cast in. And Game of Thrones' problem is very much as you were saying, is that seventh season, eighth season was so bad or poorly received. And it may be unfair to say this, but people look to a new version and think, well, would I sit through another tense, brutal run of shows to have another bad ending? Why would I invest in that? Mm. And some might be like, I've been there and done that. And there's been a few shows which have tried to tap into Game of Thrones. Shadow and Bone, which was terrible. I couldn't get into that at all.
Sounds like something to do with Bin Men.
Wheel of Time recently as well, which, again, I found unsuccessful attempt to tap in.
Never heard of that.
That's on... first one's on Netflix. Second one's on Amazon Prime. There's, obviously, as you say, got the Lord of the Rings one coming out on Amazon Prime later this year. But it is interesting that once Game of Thrones disappeared, there was never any rush to try and pick up that spot. And I kind of wonder whether part of the rush was dwindled by the fact that last season was so badly received that it scared people off. And I think with good reason. I think people just don't want... And again, it goes, but I know I'm going to say this, and I've said this a million times, you can have a brilliant beginning, you can have a bad beginning, bad middle, but you can never have a bad end. Because as soon as you have that bad end, people just will not return to your product.
Yeah.
And that's very much where it sits with Game of Thrones.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. It's what you're left. It's the lasting memory is how something ends, isn't it? And if it ends badly, then you don't want to think about it.
Well, I mean, it's like a meal, isn't it? If you have a slightly boring starter or a slightly mediocre, you can have a slightly mediocre main. But, you know, if you have a very bad chocolate cake or a very off load of fruit at the end, that'll be your last memory of the meal. It does taint it. So, yeah, the endings are so important. And I think so much more important than industries realise, which is odd because you think they would realise. In an era where your product isn't just a one-off thing anymore, like you on TV, and if you finish your show badly or you just don't finish it and you cancel it, they'll just move on to the next thing. You know, your product can have years of longevity if you do it right and if you give it a good ending. So people want to reinvest their time. They will sign on to a subscription for it. They will buy the book set. But yeah, I mean... my family bought all the box sets of Game of Thrones because they weren't watching them on stream or live. They were watching them on DVD and they're buying them cheap, but they've never looked for a cheap eighth season box set once they heard that it just wasn't very good. And I had to say, I wasn't impressed. So yeah. Good luck on that, Matt.
It's season 8. Is that the one with Ed Sheeran or is that season 7?
Oh, I think that was season 7.
Ah, oh, right. Yeah, no, we should have realised at that point that things weren't going to end well.
Well, people say that you could see the fractures in the previous two seasons as they were moving more away from the books. I don't think that's true. I think people tend to see fractures where they're starting to feel a certain amount of lag or... It's become, you know, the sparkle is going.
It lost momentum, didn't it? I think having that long break as well.
But yeah, I think there's a lot of stuff in that last season which just genuinely doesn't work. They'd been better off. I know we've talked about this before. I think they'd have been better off ending it an episode early and ending it on a really dark note, because that would have at least spoke to what the show was. But they end it on a quite bright note, and that kind of speaks to not what the show's about.
Mm.
So it was a difficult one and a crazy one, because it was still going strong. And it's one of those industry decisions I would love to understand better. Because I can understand the writers not wanting to do much more, wanting to move on, but I just can't believe that was the only way that could have, that was the only outcome. Let them rush a season out and then finish it. You know, the cast was mostly happy to stay on, as far as I'm aware. You know, the author was fine carrying it on. There was, just seems to be the only impetus to make it to shut down, from what I understand, was the writers. Now, maybe that's wrong, and that's what I'd love to know. What are the details of that story, which led to a very, very rushed ending to a very slow-running season? Mm. A show. A show which spends 6 to 7 seasons of these ice warriors slowly walking down to the actual place, and then there's like one battle, and then that's that done. Move on. And it's like, really?
So House of the Dragon is set to launch on TV in May. Along with Matt Smith, you've got Paddy Considine as King Viserys Targaryen. Matt Smith will play Prince Daemon Targaryen. Olivia Cook is Alicent Hightower. Emma Darcy, who is in the photo, is Princess Rhaenyra Targaryen. Steve Toussaint is Lord Corlys. I should be able to pronounce that. Lord Corlys Velaryon. And Rhys Ifans is also in it as Otto Hightower.
But again, this is what I just don't understand. Why prequel it? Why not do a sequel which is 15 years later, and you can do a brand new set of characters, a brand new movement? And if you want to tap into some of the old characters, if you want to use those as hooks to bring people into it occasionally, you've got them.
Yeah.
You can bring them in as ways to draw audiences back. You can even reconcile some of the problems in the previous show and into your new show. You know, you could explain why these, you know, winter came and went so quickly. Maybe that was part of a broader scheme or something. You know, you can, and by doing so, you're doing what Disney has learned and Sony has kind of learned and not learned, that you can sort of draw on those previous old franchises to galvanize interest in your current run with Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man. Why go back? Go forward. That is where your commercial interest will be. And I just don't get that. Is it a creative thing that people think would be more interesting? Is it because it gives them the space where they know the audiences will have to invest in new characters without pressure or comparison to old? Is it a legal thing? Is it that you can't write further stuff after a series like Game of Thrones, because then you'd have to pay the authors, so you can only do a prequel? Is it something like that? I just don't know what it is, but it just seems so mad.
I'm pretty sure there is a prequel book to Game of Thrones, or to Song of Ice and Fire, Fire and Ice, whatever, which George R. R. Martin has written.
Is it based on Martin's stuff? I thought it was kind of fresh.
I don't think it is based on it, no. But
Again, it's mad. But then we've seen it before. We saw it, Twin Peaks, Firewalk with Me, which again, I think was a bit of a... that was a man who is known for his creative decisions rather than his commercial ones. Which again, if it'd been successful, would have allegedly moved on to Twin Peaks season 3 that would have followed, but it wasn't successful. But that's because no one wanted a prequel. People don't want prequels. They don't like prequels. You know, when Star Wars came back, they're going, we're going to do the prequels to the Star Wars trilogy. A lot of people were just like, we don't want to see that.
We want to see what Han Solo and Princess Leia and Luke Skywalker are doing. Yeah.
Or, you know, even their, you know, 30 years in the future, because then at least... Again, like I say, it sort of makes, because people like to, I think the thing what people, they don't seem to get, and I don't understand why they don't get it. And it goes back to this Spider-Man thing as well, where you basically effectively cancel in the comics Spider-Man and Mary Jane's marriage. You are basically removing the lived experiences of the reader. The reader has gone through all their turbulence to get to this point, and you suddenly got to a point and you're going, none of that matters anymore. Now move on. And readers don't want to do that. They've lived that. And it's the same if you follow Doctor Who or Star Trek, you're living those experiences. You're happy to jump ahead 10 years or 30 years because you're still living in that continuity. But to go back, you don't do that in life. You don't suddenly jump back in time to people. You're always looking forward. And I think that's why people don't particularly like prequels.
Can you think of one that's worked?
That's a damn good question. A prequel that has actually worked. Off the top of my head, I can't, but I'm sure there is one. But I can't. I mean, I'm even thinking things like Young James Herriot, bad mistake. Young Sherlock Holmes, bad mistake.
Endeavour's okay, but I wouldn't.
Okay.
I wouldn't. What? I mean, I wouldn't. It's very different to Morse. I wouldn't say they're the same thing at all. It could easily be a completely different character.
I mean, I suppose there's a problem if you are. If you're doing a show which is set in a realistic world and it's contemporary, you can't jump ahead and do something which is ahead in time. You'd have to do it within the same period, roughly.
Yeah.
So that can tempt you to go back to prequels. I thought the Fools and Horses prequel, tonally, it didn't work, but I thought it was quite interesting in the fact that tonally it was utterly different. Wasn't Fish and Chips? It was called something like that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was the... It wasn't Fools and Horses, but it was an interesting attempt at doing something different. They did the Last of the Summer Wine, didn't they?
They did First of the Summer Wine, yeah.
First of the Summer Wine.
It was very much different. It had no audience watching it.
But then sequels aren't always the way either. I mean, you take Minder, Minder's sequel on Channel 5, that bombed. So it's not like you will always get the right result by going forward.
Didn't even know there was a Minder sequel.
Yeah, they did one with Shane Ritchie on Channel 5 about 10, 15 years ago.
It sounds awful already.
It was, where he plays the nephew of Arthur Daly. And I think George Cole appeared in an episode, maybe. I can't remember. But Dennis Waterman didn't. But that is actually a show which you probably could do a prequel to and do set it in as a period piece.
Yeah,
you could probably quite do an interesting Minder-esque sort of thing in the 50s or the 40s, where there are, you know, where times are turbulent pre or post-war, or so during or post-war. So I'm not sure it perhaps have the same humor to it, but
it's certainly be very different.
Yeah. Yes, it would be very different. I can't think of any prequels off the top of my head now. If the listener is still listening, we will listen to the listener if he has watched or listened to any prequels that he does think, or she or they think, are interesting.
Yeah, by all means, do let us know. I can't think of any. No,
I can't even think of any that's really even shaped or informed. The only prequel I think is actually good, actually spring into my head, and we've talked about this before, is the animated Clone Wars.
Well, do you know what? I was going to suggest a Star Wars thing here, actually, as well, because Clone Wars doesn't quite do what I was going to suggest, but, and it's not even a TV show, it's a video game. But the Jedi Fallen Order relies on zero characters from Star Wars, just occasional events, and there is an appearance by a key figure right at the end, but the rest of the game, there's no specific characters in there. There might be a couple that have appeared in Clone Wars or whatever. But
maybe that's also a caveat for what we're asking, is it a prequel, which isn't a prequel of the characters that are already established.
I'm wondering whether it's better to just avoid established characters and just, you know, because time is a big thing. It's timey and it's whimy. But no, it is a big thing, and there is lots of locations in our world as we know it, never mind this whole universal thing. There's lots of avenues and spaces for things to take place beyond established characters and for stories to take place in similar universes. So why that option isn't taken more regularly, I don't know, really.
I don't know. But then I suppose to say Game of Thrones. But then Game of Thrones, you know, we're going back to Targaryens, and it's like, I don't think people will give a damn. I might be put off thinking that they have to remember things from the history of Game of Thrones.
And are they even the most interesting characters in Game of Thrones, or interesting house in Game of Thrones? Probably not.
I barely remember the houses. I didn't. Yeah.
I mean, there's three key houses in the main series of Game of Thrones. There's the Sean Bean house, the Charles Dance house, and the incestual twins house. And then there's, I suppose, this far, there's also Targaryen, and there's more houses than that. But of those, I would say that either the incestuous twins house or the Sean Bean house are the two are the most interesting options to go further with. And I don't know. It just for a show that started off so well and did things so differently and subverted expectations so well, particularly with the first series and I guess into the second series as well, to then end in the way it did and everyone wanted to forget it, and then for a big artist to a well-known actor to then get a job on it, it seems a little bit like we're expected to want to watch it a bit more than we're going to, would you say?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I was just thinking another prequel which has been successful, which I didn't think would be successful, which again kind of slips out of our caveat because it's dealing with a character already established, is Young Sheldon for Big Bang Theory.
You're probably right with that, yeah.
I've never watched it, but it's, I always thought that was a terrible idea and wouldn't work, but it's apparently been quite popular, so. But we'll see, maybe Matt Smith will prove us wrong. And maybe Lord of the Rings later in this year will prove us wrong.
Fingers crossed. Which is a good time to bring this Casterbus podcast to an end. We will speak to you again soon. Let us know if you have any feedback or any thoughts on prequels or what Matt Smith's doing at the moment. And we'll speak to you again soon. Until then, it's goodbye from us.